Mr. Chatton, real one. Yep. Where were you born, please?
A place called Silverfield near Wyndham in Norfolk.
Which year was this?
1922.
Did you grow up in the Wyndham area and have your schooling there?
We left Wyndham when I was about 7 years old.
Where did you go to then?
North Walsham.
Why did you move to North Walsham?
Because my father's work. He worked here.
What did he?
GPO engineer.
And you went to school in North Walsham?
Yeah.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
1936?
Yeah.
Did you get a job?
Yeah. I was errand boy for a time. Then I went into the timber trade.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
Yeah.
Had you joined the TA?
No.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yeah, I was at the pitch house that night. North Walsham Pitchers.
How did you feel about the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, really, I suppose we really didn't understand at that age what it was all about.
Did the war affect you much at first in Norfolk?
No.
How did you come? Were you in any early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
No. This area is bombed about twice, but nothing near us. Well, I was away when it was bombed anyway.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
I volunteered.
When was that?
I went into the army the 17th December 1942.
Why did you volunteer?
Well, I just sort of got fed up with work and thought it was 2 hours, we thought we'd go in.
Where did you do your basic training?
Beverley, Yorkshire.
What was that like?
All right.
How did the people in charge treat you?
They were very good.
How did you cope with the training?
All right. Passed everything, what they put us in for.
Were you due to join the East Yorkshire Regiment or something?
No, I was in the Royal Armoured Corps.
What happened to you after the basic training?
We went to Richmond, RAC Depot in Richmond, near Catterick. Then we went from there to Catterick, and I passed out as a wireless driver, or driver operator, they used to call it.
Did you go into that line at your own request?
No, you had tests, and that was for you. You could be a driver operator, gunner operator. It was all different sorts of things, and from the tests, they put you at what they thought would be the best.
Did you like it in the Royal Armoured Corps in North Yorkshire?
Yeah.
What unit of the corps were you in?
53rd.
53rd what?
53rd RAC. That was at Catterick, that was. Then we went to the 54th when we moved.
What kind of proficiency did you achieve in wireless operating, transmitting?
I passed everything they put before us after training.
Did you have a certain speed that you had to reach?
In the RAC, there wasn't Morse code. That was just talking like we're talking. Morse code was more or less, well, the commander's tank used to do that back to the base, but the rest I was just talking like we are.
So how did you come to be in the Jedburghs?
There was a notice. We went from there on a course to Barnard Castle. And Tommy was there. There was a notice came on the orders that they were seeking volunteers for a new unit being set up, which entailed parachute jumping and Wallace operating. Anyone wishing to find out more, make an appointment to see the CO, and he'd tell you as much as he could.
Why did you volunteer for it?
Well, I thought I'd just have a go.
But did you not like what you were doing well, in Barnard?
Oh, yes, but they said, when we saw the CO, he said, well, all I can tell you is what's on the orders. It involves parachute jumping and Wallace operating. But you'll go, if they select you to go, you'll go and have further tests, and then you'll find out what it's all about. And if you'd like to back out, you can, you come back to us.
Were you worried about the danger involved?
No. There was as much danger in one as there was the other.
Did you feel there was much danger in the Royal Armoured Corps?
Well, there's also, at the time they were fighting in Egypt, and there was always thousands of tanks getting blown up and such like.
What date was it that you volunteered, do you know?
Oh, I couldn't tell you offhand, no, not now.
Would it be in 43?
Yes, that'd be in 43.
What was your next step?
The next step, I came up on orders, I'd been selected. And I went to Peterborough. Well, the first thing they'd done there was want to know about the Morse code. I said, we'd never done it. So we went on a Morse code for fortnight, 3 weeks. And after that, I passed out on it. And then they had on the side of, that was a hall where we were stationed. They had a big sort of, I don't know what you call it, sort of wooden thing put up. You used to go through the top window, right at the top floor, and just jump down in a harness. So when you hit the ground, you was actually going the same speed if you'd have jumped out of a plane. But see, they taught us how to roll once we hit the ground and everything like that. We done that 3 or 4 times, I passed that. I passed the ballers, so they said, well, now what we got to do, we've got to send you to Dunbar in Scotland. We went up there, we used to just go on two of you with the waller set. That was just like a normal case, what you carry clothes about in. You'd go out and they'd drop you off somewhere. You had a time and you had to call up the base station. They might give you an order to go somewhere else. Once you got there, you had another time to call up. And they tell you then what time you got picked up and where. That was only sort of to get used to working from distance, that's all it was.
Any incidents that happened to you in Peterborough or
Dunbar? No. When we finished that, we went back to Peterborough. Then they sent us to Ringway, Manchester. And we went there and they said, you're now going to do your jumps. You'll do one in daylight, one in darkness, and then another one, and if you're all right, you'll go home on leave. So we done, that was a barrage balloon jump. Just an ordinary barrage balloon with a box underneath. They used to let it up as if that was going up normally. And there was 5 of you went up at a time. And what all it was like the flat floor like this, but there was a big hole in it with a piece about, 4 foot, sort of more or less going down like a funnel. We used to sit on the side and push yourself off. Well, the first one we done at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They came back again, they said 4 o'clock, they'll do the second one. We went and done that. So they said, well, when that's dark, we'll do the third. Well, we'd done that about 5 o'clock, that was sort of twilight. And that was supposed to be our one in the dark. We'd done the three and that was it.
How frightening was that?
Frightening the first one. Well, they all, any time when you're sitting on the floor of that plane and that hole is underneath you, you're sort of wandering, but you've got a dispatcher with you. And he tell you when to go. The same time as he tell you to go, he hits you on the middle of the back, and that's enough just to give you the start. They didn't actually push you. They just hit you, let you know go. And that was just hard enough to sort of put you off balance, and you went.
Were there any accidents in the parachute training?
No, not there.
Do you remember the names of any of the people you were training with?
Oh, I can't remember the surname. There was a boy, Sweet, from the Isle of Wight. There was another one who used to be a cricketer for Lancashire. I forget his name now. Well, names are sort of gone, you know.
What happened to you next?
We came home on leave, and we went back to Peterborough, and then we heard the full story of what we've got to do. Drop out of France. And that was the last chance you had to back out. Well, I don't think anyone backed out.
Did you feel like backing out?
No. Well, then after day two, they notified us that they said I'd be going into France with an English captain, a French lieutenant, in the near future. Well, that went on about 3 days, and they sent for us, I forget the name of the place where we actually dropped into. The Americans took us out.
Who were the other two in your team?
Captain Saul was the English captain, the other, the Frenchman, I forget his name.
Captain Saul?
Yeah. He was a Londoner.
A what?
Londoner.
Which unit of the army had he belonged to?
Royal Army Corps. And the other one was a Free French.
Did you have a cover name?
Yeah. My name is Chrysler.
What was the cover names of the others?
I don't know. They never did tell me.
What team did you belong to? Was there a name of the team?
No, not to my knowing.
Can you tell me about the flight out?
First night we went out, we got where we should have been, and there was the dropping zone, there was going to be 3 bonfires going, but there was nothing there. So we came home again. The next night we went out again, and that was the last operational float the American crew what we had was taking us over again. Once they'd done that, they went home on leave then. So they said, we got to get rid of it. No, boys. He said, whatever happened, we got to get rid of you. But we got there and the fires were alight. The English captain went out first. The Frenchman went out second. I went out third. Went a bit too hard and hit and knocked myself out.
On what?
On the sort of the pit thing going down.
Part of the plane?
Yeah.
Were you unconscious when you hit the ground?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the parachute opened?
Yeah. That automatic opening.
How do you think it happened that you hit yourself?
Well, I suppose I just, with the dispatch there and you sitting on the hole, I pushed myself the same time as he hit me, and I just, that must have been just a bit too hard. I went across the other side of the sort of the pit thing and hit my head.
Were you seriously hurt on landing?
No. Well, no, I was all right. When I came to, I was landing, well, I thought that was a field of current pushes. by grapevines. More like, I got up, I took my parachute off, rolled it up and put it underneath one of the bushes. And I sort of thought to myself, no, the wind is blowing in that direction, we were flying in that direction. Oh, we weren't steering the chute at all, so I must have went backwards instead of forwards to where they should have been. But in the distance, I could see a house. And I could see, looking at it, you could see through the windows, just to know there was no curtains up or nothing. So I went up there, and that was an empty house, empty farmhouse. And I lay down there and had a sleep. The next morning, I got up and had a wash in a water butt, went back to where my parachute was and picked that up, and started walking off in the direction. There was a just an ordinary old stony road. Walking in the direction I thought I should have been. I walked about half a mile, and there was a bend in the road, and I'd hear someone talking. And I thought, so well, that could be anyone. But there was a big ditch beside the road, dry ditch. I got down in that and I looked. When they come round the bend, they were in British uniform. So I got out the road. They cheered and laughed and ran at me. They were the Free French, the Mackie. They were out looking for me. There was only one of them, the sergeant there. He was the only one to speak English. So we said, come on. He said, we must have breakfast, are you? So I said, where are we going? They said, see that hill over there? I said, yeah. They said, nearly at the top of that. That was about 3 miles away, I think. We went up in the mountains, in a big cave. So the first thing I had to do then was call a message, send back to say I was all right. Because they'd already sent one to say I was missing.
Your wallets have been dropped separately?
That was all dropped in containers. They got that.
What was the name of the place in France that you went into?
That I couldn't tell you, I forget the name. That one far from the Swiss border. Is it Montpellier? That's where we went to when we came down.
What happened next?
Well, the two captains and some of the Frenchmen used to go out to see what was happening. I went out once or twice to the nearest main road. That was about 10 miles away. You know, just to keep an eye to see what was happening on the main road, if the Germans were going one way or the other. But most of them were leaving. They were going north. Well, then we got a message from some of the French in Montpellier, saying the Germans all gone from there. So we moved down into the town. The two officers, one lived in one hotel, the other lived in the other, and I lived in the police station, three stories up. That was a three-story high building, and that's where they put me with the Wallace set.
Were there any police there?
Police, yeah, the police were there. That was the main station what was being used. But they were all in contact with the Maggie, so they knew what they were doing and everything, and they put me up the top. So I was more or less a prisoner, free for anything prisoner, more or less. I used to go out, because there were no Germans about there at that time. Well, then they used to keep an eye on the road and everything else, and there weren't much doing. And I received a message one day to say tune in a certain wavelength. And that was to say that the Americans were going to land at the south of France. Once they passed us, we could follow them all the way to Paris. So, of course, when the next day I saw the officer giving the message, they said, well, if they're here, we haven't seen them, they haven't come past us yet. But after making inquiries, they'd gone. The Americans had landed and gone north. So we got on I suppose he's the superintendent of the police in charge there. Because we were told then we got to go to Paris. So he said, how are we going to get there? He said, I'll get your car. Next thing, we had a big French car, where they brought us. Because we travelled up, going to Paris, we travelled up something more or less behind the Americans. We used to go and get petrol off of them and food, everything else. We ported into Paris. They debriefed us. We were there about 3 days. They sent a message, be ready to move tomorrow morning. We didn't know where to or nothing. But the next morning there was a truck came, took us to the French airport, and we flew home to Port Dakota.
About how many days do you think you were in the police station?
Well, altogether, I was in France about 15 days. Mainly, I was more or less in charge of the camp, telling the officers were out, and taking the wireless messages and sending back what messages they want sent back. Well, see, that was all done in code.
Can you tell me about the codes?
Should I?
Why not?
Well, all you had a book, and in that book there was five, maybe ABCDE, five letters in each sort of block. Well, when you received a message, if it was ABCDE, you'd write your message underneath those five at a time, all the way through. And that'd be and once you got them down, you had a piece of silk, and that was all alphabet all written crossways in it, and down, you see. So if you got AA for the first one, that might mean an E, or CB might mean a Z. You had to look for the two letters what you got, the one in the book and the one you'd written underneath it, find it on the chart, and that was your letter, the first letter of your message. All the way through.
Did it work all right?
Yeah. I'll admit sometimes you get an odd letter wrong, maybe through atmospherics and such like, but you'd always understand what the message was.
What was transmission and reception like?
Pretty good, normally.
Were you in any danger at all in France?
Not when I was up in there. The only time I was sort of worrying about it was when we moved down and I lived in the police station. I mean, the germs had gone, but they could have come back. It was just as quick as they went, mightn't it? But up in the mountains, there was only one pathway up to this cave where we lived in. So they had sort of people at the bottom, people halfway up and such like. They had a job to get up to us.
What impression did you get of the French resistance?
Good. They were very good. They treated us well. Especially when we got down at the town itself.
Did you take any prisoners?
No. No.
Any other incidents that happened to you in France?
No, not really. When we was about there at the finish, the French were about there and they were capturing the people what had been helping the Germans. And we was walking down to the main street one day, and there was crowds of people there. And they'd got three, they got right out the roof of the building, and the finish they jumped. Rather than be took back by the French people, long people, they jumped, since they'd been hunting the Germans. Killed themselves.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Were they men or women?
All men. But there was a lot walking about there. What they used to do when they caught them, shave all the hair off. And there was a lot, I suppose they were just, they were mostly women. I suppose that was then what was going with the Germans.
Was there ever any branding done?
Not that I saw.
How did you feel about that?
Well, there's nothing we could do, was there? No.
Where was the shaving of the heads done?
Well, that was done before we got there. We never actually see it done, but that was there was several walking about like that, and we asked them why they looked, and they told us. They'd been mixing with the Germans. The last part of the time, when we was down there, they were riding about, the mate were riding about in trucks and cars and all sorts, flags flying and everything.
Was there any destruction?
No, not really. You see, the idea was we were supposed to cause as much trouble as we could behind the lines. Well, we did think about what we had to talk about with the Mackie and one thing and another about blowing the main road up. But by doing that, you were stopping them from getting out and you was holding up the troops coming up and all, weren't you? Our own troops. So we sort of knocked it all ahead.
How did you get on with the other two people in your team?
All right. The Frenchman needed to speak English. And he was a nice fella.
And Captain Saul?
He was a nice bloke. He was an insurance agent. That's all he'd get. When he had talk, sitting there notes talking, that's all he was talking about, insurance.
What do you remember about the debriefing when you got back to London?
Well, you had the debriefing in Paris. They just wanted to know where we'd been and who the name of the Mackie, the group, what they called the Mackie and such like, and how many was there and all that sort of business, what we'd seen.
And once you got back to London, was that the finish of it?
No, we came back to Peterborough. We got back about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I went back, reported in, and they said, well, see you in the first thing in the morning. So I said, what's first thing? They said, well, first thing for him was 9 o'clock sort of business. So I went there at 9 o'clock. Orderly room, and he came in. I had to go into him, and he said, got your file here? Yes, he said. You ain't got far to go home? I said, no, Norfolk. Well, he said, I'll give you a chitty. He said, go and get kitted out again. But we only had one suit of khakis when we went in France. That's all we had, just the one. So we went to stores and got my new suit. I had to wait 2 hours just to have the stripes put on my arm, and then new boots and one thing or another. I went back in, so I said, what happened now? Well, they said, as soon as he come back in again, he'll sign your paper so you can go home the train. So I was about there till about 7, 7:30 at night, when I finally got my pass to come home. They took me to Peterborough Station. That was the M&GM station then. And they used to have a